Sports Radio 1290. CFRW, Winnipeg. All sports.
Yeah! Time to get a lift.
All the time. Sports Radio 1290 presents The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game. Now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at sportsradio1290.com, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm the host of this fine program, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock. Producer Tim gets us on and off the air, and Michael Remus is operating the R-Desk. Richard, Ezra, good morning, gentlemen.
Morning, Drew.
Top of the morning to you, boys.
Top of the morning. I like that, Ezra. Bringing a little class to the show on early on in the basis.
Yeah, a little class, and it was also a House of Pain song.
Mm. The sweatpants sort of diminish the class.
Drew, I have a bone to pick with you.
A bone?
Yeah.
Let's hear it.
You know, Drew, go on Facebook yesterday or this morning.
Yeah.
And you have statuses now.
Yeah.
Which is as rare, because you don't have statuses. You've locked your wall out.
No, that's
right. Statuses, but then you can't comment on your statuses.
I'm good with that.
You can't put status updates on Facebook and then not allow people to comment on it. You can't have it both ways, Drew.
I can have it any which way I want.
Drew, we're living in a transparent world. There's an election coming up. Let's enable people to comment on your statuses.
Can't have your cake and eat it too, Drew.
In fact, I think you guys both know how much I enjoy my cake, and I will eat it too. And I will go to the wall for that fact.
I've actually, complaints have been voiced to me about your lack of commenting ability on your statuses.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Can I have names?
No.
No names.
No names.
So I'm being accused of you know, by people who aren't willing to back it up with their actual names.
Well, they would, just off-air.
Off-air, I understand. Okay, well, that's fine. I'm not going to change. I stand by my decision-making as it relates to my Facebook wall. You know, when UK beats Ohio State, as they did last night, I gotta say it loud and I got to say it proud on my Facebook wall.
First of all, Drew, I'm more concerned about your comment about the political,
the election coming up.
The election coming up and your comments about how the Conservatives are going down.
I'm wishful thinking that way. I'm wishful thinking.
Another minority government, Drew. We all know that.
And you know, I'm waiting for you to run. That's what I'm waiting for, Richard. Then I'm going to.
Drew, you're going to be the next mayor of Winnipeg.
I don't think so.
Let's go.
Okay, let's go. Welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We have a jam-packed 3 hours for you this morning. Coming up at 10 o'clock, top of the next hour, Joshua Cooper from the Tennessean will be on to talk about the Nashville Predators. Predators are, you know,
red hot.
Yeah, and they're
five wins in a row, baby.
Yeah, and they're doing they're somewhat safely in a playoff spot at the moment, so it looks like they're probably going to be playoff bound for yet another year. Now the question is, will the Predators be able to do anything in the playoffs?
We'll ask Josh
about that. Coming up at 10:30 this morning from ESPN, Barry Melrose is going to be joining us.
Yep.
You know, his mullet was actually unable to join us this morning, but Barry will be here at 10:30 to talk about, we're going to go everywhere with Barry Melrose, talk a lot about, really the playoff stretch drive, the playoffs upcoming.
Oh, absolutely. Very pumped to have Barry on.
Yeah, going to be a good guest, hopefully. Former Winnipeg Jet. I don't know how many people know that, but we'll bring that up with Barry. Of course, you know, the irony of him appearing on a show called The Illegal Curve Hockey Show shouldn't be lost on anybody as well. And then at 11 o'clock, top of the final hour, Darren Pang from TSN and Fox Sportsnet Midwest going to join us, talk about the St. Louis Blues. He's the Blues color guy, so he knows everything that's going on in that organization. And there's been a lot of news there, a lot of wheeling and dealing. They had a big splash before the trade deadline, so we're thrilled to have Darren Pang on to talk about that.
Damian Cost had an article yesterday, I believe it was, about rebuilding franchises and their ability to contend, you know, make it past a couple rounds in the next 3 years, and he had St. Louis at the top of his rebuilding list. Now, it was not scientific at all. The article's
subjective.
Very subjective. But I'm just to put it in perspective in terms of how people view the Blues moving forward. Now, I will say this. People have gotten predicting, including us, predicting them to kind of take a next step for the past 2 years, and they haven't yet. Doesn't mean they won't, but they haven't yet.
That's right. So we'll talk to Darren about the St. Louis Blues coming up. And, of course, all of the latest news in the hockey world from what is, of course, a very busy week in the NHL. And really, everybody's just clamoring to start those playoffs. I mean, they're going to be about 3 weeks from now. I think it's,
April 14th, I believe.
Something like that. It's usually a Wednesday or a Thursday?
It's a Thursday, usually.
It's a Thursday. Okay, so 3 weeks from now or so. I can't wait. I mean, you know.
Or when, it's Wednesday because the season ends on a Sunday and then starts on the Wednesday.
That's right. I won't hold it against you, Richie. But before we get to that, let's recap and recap last night in the NHL and look ahead to tonight's games in the National Hockey League. Quiet night in the NHL, only 5 games last night. The start in Pittsburgh, where, honestly, I think watching paint dry might have been more entertaining than watching this hockey game. The Pittsburgh Penguins beat the New Jersey Devils 1-0 in a shootout.
Yeah, Drew, we were talking about this game, you know, when we were meeting before, and I watched that entire game at home.
So
it was a quiet night for me, obviously.
was there no paint drying to watch?
Yeah, it was one of those nights. Coke and chips and an early Friday night to get ready for the show, but there were 4 shots in that period.
In the first period.
Yeah, that's right. There was four shots total
in the first period.
And
by both teams.
As me and Drew were discussing, Tom Giulitti, who we've had on the show, who on Twitter, his name is @TGFireNice, tweeted that that's actually the lowest shot total the Devils have had, which they only had 1 shot on net. And that was the lowest total since 1982 when they joined the NHL. So the Devils played absolutely horribly yesterday. You know, they lost 1-0. You know, Martin Brodeur kept them in there for that long. But
so it's the league's fault for giving teams a point for going to overtime and not getting anything done.
Yep. That's right. Yeah. Well, that's the problem with a 3-point game. Now, it won't really matter in this case because New Jersey's out
of
the running.
But generally.
But generally, every game's a 3-point game. So it almost makes some of the games meaningless, which is the real problem with it. But boy, oh boy, that was a dull game there in Pittsburgh last night.
As it needs to change, the problem is Gary Bettman likes the fact that every team is quote-unquote in it, even though lots of these teams are way, way better than other teams. Like Chicago was way better than Dallas.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not saying the 3-point game is the only reason Dallas is there, but just, you know, teams are in it. Columbus is in it. Calgary's in it. You know, like a Calgary shootout record.
That's right. Well, when you're a gate-driven league, you want all the teams to be in it so that people will keep buying tickets to your game.
That's right, but I mean, to me, it's a flawed system.
Of course, it's a fake system is what it is. You and the teams expose one another come playoff time where, you know, there aren't any 3-point games and the wheat separates from the chaff.
And boys, you know what's funny about that game? The game was a scoreless game going into the overtime. The overtime was terrible. And the funny thing is, people that say the shootout is really interesting. The shootout was in that game was also terrible.
Shootout's garbage.
Kovalchuk, you know, his move was basically just going wide and shooting, and then you know Kovalev missed, and then James Neal got the winning goal. But
how many times
it doesn't save a boring game?
How many times did they say scoreless tie? Like what else could it be? It can't be a scoreless lead.
No, it's got to be a scoreless tie. You're absolutely right.
Well, it's redundant.
Yeah.
Well, that bothers me when people say that.
Really, it's one of the bones you have to pick.
It's a scoreless game. It's not a scoreless tie. If it's scoreless, it's tied. Anyways.
You're absolutely right. In Atlanta last night, Vancouver continued their hot streak, beating Atlanta 3-1. Vancouver's a better team than Atlanta. Mm-hmm. Showed it last night. What I found interesting is that they started Luongo in that game. Would have thought that would be a Schneider game.
Do they play tonight?
Let me double-check that. But
put him in the spot there, Drew. The truth is, Drew, as long as they don't play back-to-back, it really is relevant who they play and who they don't play. They're way ahead of everybody. They're going to win.
They're off tonight.
There you go. So they don't have a game. Yeah. Might as well put Luongo in there. You want to keep him sharp. You're dominating. You're going to win the President's Trophy. You're going to have home ice advantage throughout the playoffs. Right now, you just want to get your guys sharp. That's it.
That's right. And they did. So good for Vancouver.
And Schneider's played a lot this year.
That's true.
So Luongo's not tired. There's no Olympics.
Right.
No stress there. So, I mean, he's had his time off. He should be fresh and ready to go in the playoffs. And he looked good yesterday.
Yeah. And now Vancouver's obviously crushed their Dustin Byfuglien curse now by winning that game.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. In Ottawa last night, the household names that everybody in the hockey world is talking about, Colin Greening and Eric Condra, scored for the Senators as they beat the Capitals 2-0.
You know, Craig Anderson played a great game.
Yeah.
But you have to... Washington's a team we're going to ask Barry Melrose about because, I mean, what are they? Really, you know, what are they? Are they a scoring team? Are they a defensive team? Are they now a mix of both? You know, Ovechkin's not playing. I mean, are they resting him because he's injured, or are they resting him just to rest him? You know, sometimes the San Antonio Spurs have done the resting thing, but the San Antonio Spurs in NBA have done the resting thing when their players are older.
Yeah.
Ovechkin's 23, 24, 25. I don't know exactly what his age. I think he's 24 or 25. I don't know exactly what his age is, but does he need rest at this point? You know, and the argument, oh, he's saving it for the playoffs. I always compare it to, like, Wayne Gretzky, Mario Lemieux, and all these guys. I mean, if they could play, they played.
Yeah.
And Richie, you have to think that if he's saving it for the playoffs and, you know, Washington, you know, only gets to the second round or something, that could very well likely happen if they played Tampa Bay in the second round. What was he saving it for? So he could...
That's right.
He could get his team to the second round?
The truth is, with Ovechkin, Drew, the truth is this. People study video.
Yeah.
And Ovechkin's a scorer, not a passer. I mean, there's more assists than goals there, but he's a scorer, not a passer. And he's easier to stop than Crosby, because Crosby can beat you in so many ways. Ovechkin can beat you a certain amount of ways, but Ovechkin's big move was always pulling the puck down the left side and cutting over to the middle and ripping that shot. What defensemen have done is, A, the back checker's gone, a big back checker's gone, and he met him in the middle, so when he cuts into the middle, somebody is there. And secondly, the defenseman has been cheating, and he knows that Ovechkin's probably going to do a quick shot, gets a stick in the lane, jumps him a bit. So they've been reading him, they've been watching video. He needs to adjust his game. That's one of the big things here. He needs to adjust his game.
And that's what the great ones do, because, you know, teams are always matching up against them and saying, okay, you know, and if anybody else beats us, it's okay, but we can't have a Crosby beat us, or we can't have have Ovechkin beat us. So, but the great ones adjust their game so that the opponent isn't able to react to their new, you know, tricks of the trade, for lack of a better euphemism.
But he's known for certain goals and certain ways to score.
No, everybody's got their favorites, but you still have to adjust, especially when after with all the videotape that's out there. The two games last night that had real playoff implications were in Tampa Bay and in Buffalo. Big win for the Carolina Hurricanes. They went into Tampa Bay. Mm-hmm. They beat the Lightning 4-3. Carolina is still 3 points behind Buffalo for the final playoff spot in the East.
Playoffs.
But more importantly, what they've done is they've kept pace with Buffalo, as Buffalo beat Florida on home ice 4-2 last night.
As Joffrey Lupo said, he didn't expect the Sabres to lose to the Panthers.
Well, nor should they.
The problem is Joffrey Lupo shouldn't have expected his team to lose to the Panthers last week.
And yet they did. But, you know, right now the East is, Toronto's still on the fringes of things there. They're 5 points behind Buffalo, but I think, nobody expects Toronto to make it.
See ya.
I think Buffalo,
I hope nobody expects Toronto to make it.
You never know, but.
See ya.
Yeah. I mean, Carolina's 3 points behind Buffalo. They have the same games, they have 8 games left, both of them.
James Myrtle had an interesting article on the Globe on Hockey, the blog there on theglobesports.com. Carolina's man games lost.
We're
going to
talk about it later on. It's in rapid fire.
58 games.
It's nothing. It's the lowest in the league.
Parise's missed 55 games.
Yeah. There you go.
It's in rapid fire later on that article. Yeah. But it's a very good article.
Crosby's almost missed 50 games at this point.
Yeah. Sure. Well, lots of players have missed a ton of
playoffs. You know.
But Carolina 3 points behind Buffalo for that final playoff spot in the East, and that's just that's the race to watch right now. Looking forward to tonight's action in the NHL. Games get earliest game is in Boston. The Rangers are at Boston.
Love it.
It's starting about 12 noon, actually, Winnipeg time.
I said last week that that's one team that Boston doesn't want to play in the playoffs, because the forechecking of the Rangers with that defense on Boston, which is, you know, not as good puck moving, I think, as some other teams in the Eastern Conference, could cause a lot of trouble. I wouldn't want to play. I'm telling you right now, I'll stay in the playoff preview show. You don't want to play the Rangers in the first round.
The Rangers
are the
only team in the bottom four in it right now that I think is a threat. I don't think Buffalo is a threat. I mean, New York, I think, is a team that's the most playoff ready team out of the bottom four teams, and I agree with you.
A lot of games that have playoff implications. Tampa Bay at Carolina tonight, New Jersey at Buffalo tonight, Washington at Montreal, Toronto at Detroit. I mean, there's some good action. Anaheim at Chicago tonight should be a dandy game.
Yeah.
And San Jose at Phoenix should be, I mean, if it wasn't in Phoenix where it's, a terrible atmosphere, that would be, those are two great teams playing right now. But, so there's a lot of great hockey, and the late game tonight, Calgary at Edmonton, which, you know, Calgary needs to win as many times as they can.
Yeah, they need to run the table and get a lot of help.
Yeah, Edmonton could easily, you could say that if Edmonton beats Calgary tonight, that's
exactly
their season.
Yeah, well,
they have a little
Calgary
bit of chance.
Calgary can't lose to Edmonton.
They've made it difficult on themselves with the fact that they have the least amount of games remaining.
Yeah.
So it's going to be tough for them. Hopefully they make it. It's going to be very tough. They've put themselves into a difficult situation.
I don't think they're going to, but you're absolutely right. They have to run the table to have a chance and then get some help. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to discuss Matt Cook and his role as a villain, public villain number one in
the
NHL.
He's a bad boy.
Yes, but we won't be seeing him for a little while. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 9:15 this morning. Coming up on the program, Joshua Cooper of the Tennessean, Barry Melrose of ESPN, and Darren Pang of TSN and Fox Sportsnet Midwest. If you want to reach us in studio, one of the great ways to do it is by using Twitter. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. We'll be taking some phone calls in the final hour, 780-1290, so you can get your phone call topics ready for that, 780-1290. And, of course, you can always send us an email in studio, drew@IllegalCurve.com. Boys, Matt Cook reared his ugly head yet again.
Does he have another head?
He certainly doesn't seem to ever use his head. So, I mean, you know, I'm not sure what he has in terms of what it is that's sitting on the top of his shoulders. But suspended for the rest of the regular season, 10 games, and for the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs after delivering a flying elbow to the head of New York Rangers defenseman Ryan McDonagh.
Guys, I have a theory about Matt Cook. Hear me out, and it involves the show Seinfeld. Remember when George pretends like he has that nervous twitch where his elbow kind of, you know, pops out and, you know, he pretends that he has that twitch? Maybe Matt Cook, I think Matt Cook has that twitch because it seems like when Matt Cook is skating by someone, instead
his elbow
of,
just keeps his, twitching.
His elbow just twitches and it pops out and happens to hit someone in the head, but I mean,
should he go see Dinkins' doctor? Or no?
People think Crosby's going to be back for the playoffs, by the way, so the Cook being out for the first round, he might maybe able to come back. The argument, Drew, was that Cook should have got the rest of the season and the playoffs.
What did you think?
I was satisfied as an NHL fan.
Yeah. It's a minimum of 14 games is what he got.
You know, as a fan of the game, I thought that it was a fairly strong, you know, if you want to do the two playoff games for regular season, one playoff game means two regular season games. I can understand that. So you just say about, you know, over 20 games. As a fan of the game, I thought, okay, you know what? It was a fairly heavy-handed suspension, more than they've done in the past, and they gave him, you know, they gave him a lot of games. I think that, in all honesty, though, he was an easy target.
Yeah, he certainly
and
was.
And so they set a precedent here in some ways, but why not really, really, really put the hammer down and say, you know what, you are out for the regular season, and you are out for the playoffs.
Do you think they really did set a precedent? Because you mentioned that Matt Cook's an easy target.
Yeah.
If this is a first-time offender who does this.
Right, and I agree with that, Drew, and that's a concern. Would it, and also, would they done this? If this was Sidney Crosby, and he had done this.
How many games would he have got? If this isn't Matt Cook, if this is a known second-line player on a team with no other history. I mean,
Drew, the history has to play into it.
Of course it has to play into it. But, I mean, you know, say...
Or you
I
can
mean,
use
I don't
Danny
wanna,
Heatley, Drew.
Well, say this... Say
you got two games.
You know, say this is Claude Giroux who does this, just hypothetically, a guy who's got really no history of this or anything like that.
Your point, though, is if
how
he does...
How many games does, is
but,
he... Would
but
Claude
the better
Giroux
analogy
get?
Would be if Giroux did it five times, and then he did it the sixth time, and he was a top player, and they were looking to suspend him. Would Giroux and Cook get the same suspension if they did the same things? That's the question. What? And I don't think Giroux would have, because the NHL generally is to protect their best players.
So you're saying
in terms of suspensions.
So you're saying that if this was a superstar with a history, if this was Alex Ovechkin, who's got a history of,
exactly
of supplemental discipline.
He would not have got as many games, so I'm saying.
Well, not! But I mean, I think that's the problem. No, I mean, this one, you're right. It was an easy suspension for the NHL.
It was hard to screw this one up.
Yeah, I mean...
And they did screw it up. Guys, let's be honest. If you want to take this out of the game, and Matt Cook, this is the fifth time he's been suspended. He's the worst offender. He's arguably the worst at the offender of the headshots.
Yes,
he knocked Mark Savard out.
That's fair.
I think you lay... Like, I'm going to take what Richie said further. You lay the hammer down, and you suspend him, and you fine him.
Well, the fine is... He doesn't get paid his salary, so you don't need a fine.
The truth is...
The maximum fine they can level on a guy is $2,500.
Give him the whole... Throw the full hammer down.
He loses $220,000.
Yeah, he loses a quarter of $1 million.
$2,500.
And that wife on Twitter was going nuts.
It's an extra couple nickels.
His wife?
No, a wife on Twitter. She's an NHL wife.
Oh, okay.
We added her on Twitter, so you can go to our following and add her.
Add Illegal Curve.
And she was saying, you know... She calls her husband Hubster.
Hubster?
Kind of... Odd. Anyways,
are you sure this isn't Hustler's wife?
she was going
Hustler's
on.
Not married.
Trippy. That we know of.
Anyways, true enough. And so she was going off. She's like, if my husband did that, I'd kill him. You know, 220. She's not in for the money or anything. But the point is, guys, is it's a lot of money. But this is
hope that Matt Cook has a tax-free savings account.
Yeah, practically, guys. This is the question I have. If you suspend Matt Cook for the entire playoffs,
okay,
or you suspend him for a first round, I think the NHL bigwigs should have been taken into consideration. Well, do the Penguins make it out of the first round? And if they don't,
But Richie, well, I don't think you can take that against
Let him finish his point.
My point is, if they do or if they don't. Say they don't think they're going to, without Crosby. If you give them a, you know, or maybe make it out of the first round, but not make a long run. If you say the playoffs,
yeah,
the idea of the playoffs has more of a strong impact than it does one round. So say you think you're going to win two rounds.
Right.
Even if you say playoffs, meaning four playoffs. Rounds. Exactly, four rounds. It's a heavy-handed suspension, and it has more of an effect than just one round. Do you know what I mean by that?
Of course. I mean, it's a harsher punishment to be suspended for the entire playoffs.
But it might not mean
it might not
four
mean,
rounds.
Of course, but you're willing. Are you willing to say? I mean, are you willing? But you're willing to take that risk.
And then also, Drew, the point is this: is if they win a round,
yeah,
the spotlight comes back onto him. Well, if you didn't do that, you would be playing. They win another round. Matt Cook could have been playing, but he did this. Went in another round. Matt Cook could have been playing, but he did this. Now, they're talking about Matt Cook's absence, and they're talking about how, you know, I also heard, you know, they talked about on TV about Matt Cook being a great penalty killer and all that jazz. You know, that's great, Matt Cook being a great penalty killer, and the Penguins being really good on the penalty kill this year. But Matt Cook's not the only reason for that team being good on the penalty kill.
Matt Cook is not
one of the main reasons for that is the Benik Mihailuk signing.
That's right. Matt Cook is not the key to that team by any stretch. And, I mean, you might take a step down with whoever you're replacing him with, but let's not overvalue Matt Cook. Because if Matt Cook was that good, if he was truly that good, he wouldn't have to engage in these actions. Because the best players in the world, for the most part, don't play on that edge.
Totally.
They don't play on that edge where they...
Or they do until they mature, like Kessler and
Burrow. That's fine. But then they realize, hey, I'm hurting my team by being a psychopath. Matt Cook, the only way Matt Cook can stay in the NHL, really, is by... And is effective in the NHL, is by being a psychopath. But he can never find a happy balance. That's his problem.
But boys, you know, I understand Richie's rationality as far as, you know, the NHL's point of view, but isn't this another example of how their vision is very short-term? I mean, long-term, the NHL and the NHLPA now wants to take these types of hits out of...
I'm not sure the PA does it.
Yeah, I'm not sure
most people in hockey want... Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I mean, the NHLPA hasn't taken a very proactive approach, but the NHL... I mean, we've had so many issues with their past rulings, and to me it seems like, you know, 14 games was, you know, the short side of a long suspension. They could have easily... given him the full playoffs off, you know, whatever that is,
right.
You know, who knows, 14 to, you know,
minimum of 14 games, maximum games whatever, of 38 right? games.
Yeah, and to some people this was laying the hammer down, but to me it wasn't. That's my personal opinion. I think they could have given him more.
And in reality, would the PA be that against it? Because in truth, you're not taking that much money away from him.
That's true.
You're not paying for the playoffs.
You're right. You're not being paid for the playoffs. So that's, you're right. I mean, in the financial sense of the word, he's not getting as harsh of an
effect. Wasn't that the perfect storm? Now, granted, you set a precedent moving forward that it could be over a regular season, and then you would take money away.
If he levels the same hit in the third game of this season.
He'll get the whole season.
You think he'll get the whole season?
Yeah, if he does another hit like this, yeah.
You think he'll get the whole season?
Yeah. Remember, the players hate him too, right? So the players would go to fear and be like, well, let's get him gone for the season.
That's true.
If you saw the comments by the players who were interviewed about him, nobody has respect for him.
Well, guys,
as they shouldn't.
But Richie,
the worst hit he ever made was the Mark Savard hit, which the NHL found there to be no reason for suspension.
Yeah.
That was the most absurd ruling.
Well, let's go over what some of the players said. It's the talk of the dressing room every time something happens like that, and it's always him. It's always the same guy, said Toronto Maple Leafs forward Clark MacArthur. He referred to Cook as a dangerous player.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's...
It's absurd!
This is Jason Spezza. I think that's a direct example of what you don't need in the game. There's no reason for him to stick out his elbow like that. I mean, these are the for the most part, the players are a bit of a fraternity, and they don't throw each other under the bus. You got to be pretty well hated to be thrown out of the bus.
He's hated. Yeah. The fact of the matter is,
Kevin Bieksa, that play could have happened 20 years ago the same way, and obviously it's being penalized a lot harsher these days, and it should be. There's no room for that hit 20 years ago, and there's no room for that hit today. It's a pretty clear issue.
Yep.
I mean, Luke Shen. Some feel that the hit is merely a result of Cook's gritty style of play, Maple Leafs defenseman Luke Shen feels that's no excuse. It's not even a matter of going out there and being an agitator. It's just, in this instance, keep going after guys' heads. He's done it a few times before, so obviously he knows there should be a consequence, and he knows that he's hurt guys before, too. When you go in there deliberately with an elbow, there shouldn't be any room in the game for that.
Andrew, let me tell you something about, you know, him going in there and being all conciliatory. Pat Morris's agent saying he wants to change. Matt Cook's not changing.
He can't. If he changes, he won't be an effective NHL player.
Guys, he's been in the NHL for 12 years. It's not like he's 22 years old here. But on that point, though, Drew, I think it's a positive sign. We mentioned the PA hasn't been proactive or doesn't really care about taking this out of the game. I think more and more players are starting to speak and show and speak publicly, not throwing guys under the bus, but just, you know, speaking their mind and saying that they want this out of the game. I think that's a good sign.
When the PA comes together and says, we want this out of the game, it'll be out of the game.
Yep.
Because the players and the owners have no problem with it. It's just that for now, the PA hasn't been cared enough.
You're making the assumption that Donald Fair doesn't have a classroom discussion and educate them to how much money they're losing, and then suddenly they switch sides.
You're absolutely right. You're right.
Memories are short, especially when there's this many concussions.
That's true. That's not funny. But before we go to break, kudos to the Penguins organization. They've taken the lead on it, and when it affected their guy, they didn't back down and try and change
absolutely.
Their tune.
They stood
by the words that they had said in the general manager's meetings and everything.
Now, he was signed to an extension when?
Last year.
Maybe the end of last year.
Yep.
Wasn't he a dirty player before the end of last year?
Yeah, but you know...
So let's just put that out in the open.
Okay,
full disclosure here, Drew.
Yeah, I know. But they have to, you know, you're not going to run a team and say we're not going to assign any gritty/dirty players ever, but you have to take responsibility for the actions of those dirty players. That's all.
You also paid the guy 3 years.
Well, I mean, they might be overpaid, but that's a separate issue
altogether.
Well,
you're giving him the money.
I mean, he's getting $1.8 million up 10, 11, and 12. So he's under contract for a couple more years, which is a problem that they have to deal with. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some injuries from around the NHL. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. In the morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm the host of this program, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg, Richard Pollock, Michael Remus.
Tim, that's the odds,
producer,
right?
Tim.
The odds?
That's Ezra Ginsberg you're hearing from right there. Is it the odds?
It's Tom Petty.
Tom Petty, I know.
No, who's the odds? Heterosexual Man, right? You know that song, Heterosexual Man?
Yeah.
I'm saying that, Drew, because I'm looking at you. I thought that was the odds. That's Petty. That is Petty. Why did I think that?
That's right down a dream.
Yeah. I don't know why.
The odds were influenced by Tom Petty.
You're just making stuff up.
You've heard of the band The Odds, though, right?
I have heard of the band The
Odds.
Great
band.
You're really just all over the place on that.
You're pretty odd, is he?
Yeah. Speaking of The Odds. Anyways, let's go around the another week in the NHL, another week worth of injuries. So let's go around the NHL and talk about the injuries, starting in Los Angeles, where rare is the day where we are proven to be so right. But Justin Williams of the Los Angeles Kings is out for the season after suffering a dislocated shoulder on Sunday.
Well, there's conflicting reports if it's out for the season or 4 weeks, right?
I have out for the season, but I'll defer to your wisdom there, my friend.
Yeah, I'm with you, Richie. When the report first came out in L.A., it said he's out for the rest of the regular season.
Reports, yeah. Who knows?
Now it says that he's out for the regular season and the playoffs, so...
Okay, well, in any event, Justin Williams is injured.
Yes.
But
there's a big difference, though, Drew. If he's just out for the next 3 weeks,
I'm sure we can look into that.
But also,
see if we
guys,
get some more confirmation.
Even if he is injured, you want him to be day-to-day questionable in the playoffs, so you throw the other team off a bit if he can be back and not back, right?
Fine, but first of all, if he's coming back in the, if he's gonna be back in the for the playoffs, he's not going to be fully healthy.
Right.
And when you have a dislocated shoulder, that is a huge that's a huge red bullseye for a team to start targeting you on.
Especially when your game is very much along the boards, working hard along the boards.
Exactly. He's a guy who needs the contact to be successful. So this is a big red flag. Now, last week or 2 weeks ago when we were questioning the contract that Justin Williams signed with the Los Angeles Kings? The
too
contract
much money
extension.
For a guy who's never proven that he can stay healthy. He's been great.
Exactly what you just said. Never proven to stay healthy. I mean, that's what you have with Justin Williams, is a guy who has not proven...
That was our clip from 2 weeks ago, Remus? You got more clips from that?
It's rare when we're that correct, Remus.
Too much money there.
Keep going.
Too much money there.
Keep going.
Same clip again? Why wouldn't you sign him to a 2 or 3 year deal?
you know, think about shoulder injuries.
4-year deal was ridiculous.
Those clips just repeated what we just said.
I know, but it's
well, rare. We said it beforehand.
We said it 2 weeks ago, so we were right.
Yeah,
the guy who's injury prone. I mean,
he definitely struck while the iron was hot, so to speak.
I mean, you know, we didn't understand. I mean, we didn't really understand the contract signing. We made that clear. Okay, that's done with. They're stuck with it now. Let's talk about the on-ice impact. What does Justin Williams, the loss of Justin Williams, mean to the Los Angeles Kings?
Well, it's the team that, you know, Drew is at the bottom of the, you know, the shots for on net in the game. You know, they're the bottom five in the league, Drew. And that's an issue in terms of generating offense. He's one of their top six forwards, and he's a good player. He's very strong along the boards, as we mentioned before. He's got good puck skills, and it's going to be a loss for them. There's no doubt about it.
Richie, he's second on the team in scoring. I mean, let's not get too excited here. I mean, he's been a very nice... He's had a nice season on the second line. But the Kings have rotated so many wingers on both their top two lines, mm-hmm. and they haven't worked. And that, to me, for someone who picked the Kings to go all the way, that's a concern. I mean, you have guys like Wayne Simmonds who have been good at times and not good at times, and you have Ponikarovsky who's been horrible this year. It's a huge concern. The Kings' weakness is on forward, in my opinion.
23rd in the NHL in goals per game.
Their defense is solid.
Problem.
Their defense is solid. It's very
great,
solid.
Great defense.
They added Scuderi first, and then they added Willie Mitchell.
That's
so
right.
the Kings are very much going to depend on, you know, a few players. I mean, you're going to have, I mean, Andrei Kopitar's finally started to score on a consistent basis.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, Penner is nice there on the on you can plug him in on different lines.
Well,
but
I was going to ask about Penner.
They don't have a lot of, like, I mean, this is pretty big. He's their second leading scorer. So if you don't have him, especially for the first round of the playoffs, and you're playing, you know, if you match up against, you know, it's going to change. But if you match up against Chicago or you know, one of those teams, that's going to be a huge problem.
Well, Justin Williams, 73 games played. So he's actually been healthy this year for the, you know, for the most part. He's been as healthy as he's ever been. 73 games played. He's got 22 goals, 35 assists for 57 points. How big, now with his loss and his absence, how big does that trade for Dustin Penner at the trade deadline look now?
Well, the problem is, Drew, is really what you're doing is just replacing one with the other. Now, they're different players. One's bigger, one shoots a different way, one has a different game completely. But they add basically the same end result.
Right.
Same level of offense for the most part. So what you're doing is you're basically back to where you were before the deadline.
Which is, and obviously you thought, and goal scoring is obviously an issue, and it'll
exactly.
continue to be an issue there
exactly.
in Los Angeles. The question is, can they, you know, if they're in the playoffs, there's a lot more 2-1 games than there are 5-4 games.
I mean, the end of the day, Drew,
games.
The end of the day, they lack speed, which we're going to talk about in six things this week. But the, you know, they lack speed, but their game is controlling the boards, and Penner does do that too. Penner does do that. So I mean, he works to a strength, but they just don't. I don't know if they have the horses right now.
Drew, I should clarify too that LA right now is in fifth, and they'd be playing Phoenix. But the fact is,
they would beat Phoenix.
They would beat Phoenix. But the thing is, yeah, I guess, you know, I would say that they have a good enough defensive team and quick, you know, in the second full year is a good enough goalie. But if you're matching up against Vancouver or Detroit in the
mm-hmm.
second round,
mm-hmm.
you're not playing 2-1 games. Those are high-powered offensives,
yeah.
offenses, and you know, it's pretty simple as far as the Williams injury goes. Those guys are just going to have to produce offensively, and those are the Ponikarovskis, the Kopitars. They called up Oscar Moeller. I mean, these are all guys that have not produced at the NHL level, and it's a huge concern. And you know, hopefully Williams will be back for them. But this is maybe where LA could have used another body,
yeah,
and not just Penner, because,
you know,
Penner's nice, but
career Williams is a .64 points per game player, and obviously, you know, these guys are getting a little older and more close to the end of their prime, or close to the end of their prime, and Dustin Penner is at .58, so they're pretty similar in that respect. You know, basically, you're doing is you're shuffling one in and one out. The problem is they need both.
Yeah, that's exactly the problem is, and they have no one else to replace to get up to a half a point a game or anything like that.
Guys, remember when we had Jim Fox on and he said that what the LA Kings need is a top six forward, right?
Yeah.
And they went out and got
mm-hmm.
Penner, who was a top six forward. But now you've lost Williams, so now you need another top six forward.
Exactly right.
Ponikarovsky and Wayne Simmonds. I mean, they're still. I mean, Ponikarovsky.
They're not going to do it.
They're not the answer.
Let's move to Washington. Washington. This is sort of a bizarre one because they haven't really announced an injury or anything. You know, they're resting Alex Ovechkin for a bunch of nagging undisclosed ailments for 7 to 10 days. It just really, I mean, it seems like they're going all in for the playoffs as they should, but. What do you think of their move about resting a guy for 7 to 10 days right before the playoffs start?
I don't really understand. I mean, unless he's really, you know, really, really injured. I mean, the guy hasn't had a great season. I'm sure he takes time off during the year, you know, when he's... I mean, granted, they're still in second place, and they're the third most points in the National Hockey League. So for all the team, the people ripping them, I mean, they have done pretty good this year. And they can afford to rest him, so that's okay. I just don't understand why a top player without a significant injury needs to be rested. I mean, I realize regular season points don't mean much, especially because Tampa's really fallen back. So they're going to be a top three seed, guys.
Right.
And it doesn't really matter who you play. In reality, it probably doesn't matter who you play too much when you're Washington. But I just find it odd. I understand their perspective. I just find it odd from a top player that unless something's really going wrong, why he wouldn't want to be out there refining his game before this playoff start.
Everybody's doing it.
I think the most, it's a little bizarre. So do you want to have something on that?
I'm going to throw something out here, and it's not like, this isn't super controversial, but I think Washington babies Ovechkin a little bit. I think they almost give Ovechkin, a little bit too much attention and too much credit. I mean, there's been, in the past, Ovechkin has, gotten his way. And, I mean, it's granted, he is the franchise, but how many players around the NHL are nursing injuries right now? I mean, shouldn't he have done this?
But isn't that a luxury that Washington has earned by their good play so far this year, that they can heal up their guy, their superstar, for 10 days?
I'm not taking issue with them. I'm taking issue with Ovechkin himself.
Okay. You think that he should have said, no, I want to be in the
lineup? He's asking for preferential treatment. I mean,
I wonder why he's a top player. I mean, it's like Gretzky. Gretzky didn't take games off.
Even when he couldn't tie
his
skates
himself
or anything.
Off.
Yeah. He's always out there. I see your point.
Lemieux couldn't even tie his own skates, and he played.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't see a major injury here. Maybe there is, and we're going to find out about it later.
By the way, the Capitals baby in Ovechkin has nothing to do with the fact that he still lives with his parents, or he brought his parents over from Russia. I just think that...
Thanks for clarifying
I was
concerned.
I think I can understand that sarcasm, Drew.
Yeah, okay. Let's go to Chicago. Patrick Sharp. Now, Patrick Sharp was injured.
Yeah, he's back for the playoffs.
If
they make the playoffs.
If they make the playoffs, though, they're not locked into anything.
No.
So how important is that injury? I mean, Chicago's right now in seventh. They're only 2 points up on Dallas.
Yeah. They're making the playoffs.
Well, yeah, playoffs. We expect that they're going to make the playoffs, but there's no guarantee that they're going to do so. And I
what
mean,
if I guarantee it, Drew?
They have a hard schedule.
What if Richie guarantees it?
They do have a hard schedule, and I mean, Patrick Sharp is a key component. Like, why aren't more people...
That line has been unbelievable.
Everyone assumes that Chicago is going to make the playoffs, but I'm not sure why they assume that.
Well, because they're the best team.
Defending champions.
I know that,
but you
still have to win the games, and you've lost one of your key players now.
Play to win the games, Drew.
I know. I understand that. Thank you very much. I appreciate you throwing cliches at me and everything.
No, but in honesty, Drew, you have made a very good point, and people assume that they're going to make it. Why? Well, their goal differential is great. Their top two lines are still very good. Their top four defensemen are good, and Crawford's been solid in net, and they have a good coach. Overall, as an organization, they're really good. But it's a three-point game, and the team really didn't turn it on until the second half here in terms of their guys getting going. Taves putting the team on his back. You're right. People are making an assumption. I mean, Dallas is only 2 points back. Now, another factor there, Drew, of course, is that the Flames really have no games left.
Right.
And Dallas really isn't as good as the numbers would say. So those are the two reasons also why people are saying they're going to make it. But who knows what happens? I mean, they play a huge game against Anaheim tonight.
Yeah.
That's very important. I mean, and
at home.
What happened? At home. Sure, at home. But Anaheim's as desperate as they are.
Yeah, Anaheim's a good team. And with Jonas Hiller back also.
And you look at the remainder of their schedule, and there's no gimmies. Obviously, there's no gimmies in the NHL. I mean, there's not many Colorados and Edmontons and Columbuses out there now. But you look at the remaining schedule, and let's go over it, because I think that's a factor here in our analysis. They play Anaheim tonight. Monday, they play the Red Wings. They have to go out east.
Don't they have three games against the Red Wings? Coming up? Two?
Two.
Yeah.
They play the Red Wings. So this is their schedule. Ducks tonight, Red Wings on Monday. Tuesday, they play the Bruins.
So they have a back-to-back road.
Right. Friday, they play the Blue Jackets on the road. That's a bye. Then they play the Lightning at home. Then they play at the Habs. Then they play the Blues at home.
Back-to-back again.
Then they play the Red Wings on the road again. Then they play the Red Wings three times, Ezzy. They play the Red Wings at home.
They finish the year with a home-and-home against Detroit. I mean, that's a hard schedule.
It's a hard schedule.
And when you're with one of your top players, especially on a line that has been one of the top two lines in the hockey in the last month or so.
It's a very good point.
It's a big loss. That's all I'm saying. And I don't know why people aren't talking about it as much. Everyone just assumes it's a foregone conclusion that the Blackhawks are going to make the playoffs.
You play to win the game.
There you go. You got to win the games. Let's go to break. When we come back, NHL news and notes. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.
Are we at Big Dancing?
I was just going to say that.
Anybody know who that is?
Is that the guy from that BlackBerry commercial with the DJ?
DJ Co-op?
Is that Co-op?
Honeycut?
Standard music bed.
Just a regular music bed.
Tim's trying to play a trick on us there. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. To reach us, you can do so on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. You can become a fan of ours on Facebook, facebook.com.
Or you can become a fan of ours in real life. You can come up to me. You can come up to me on the street, and if you want to just be a fan, shake my hand, you know, tell me that I'm doing a good job. I mean, we handshakes are, and high fives are also appreciated, Drew.
You know.
I don't like touching people.
Even if you had even if you had gloves on,
even if I'm in a, I don't know where these people have been.
I love touching people.
I know it's just,
I mean, not in a creepy way. I mean, high fives and handshakes are the language of life right there.
Continuing on from where we were talking about last.
Did Ignatieff lose composure yesterday, Drew?
Nobody lost composure yesterday. Harper lost the confidence of the country yesterday. That's what happened.
Ooh, looks like he lost composure.
I don't think. I think you're just trying to antagonize me now, Richard.
That's a National Post article.
Thomas Steen should be there.
They're real legitimate.
They're liberal people. Yeah. Right?
Can you tell me what Pravda says about the communists? I think they're very happy about them right now. Anyways,
how did the Rhinoceros Party do last time?
I don't know. Aren't you running for them?
Good job. Quickly, guys,
before we
go to news and notes, comparing the Chicago schedule, of course, to the Dallas schedule. Dallas plays at the Predators tonight. About it, we'll talk to Josh Cooper. At 10 o'clock about the Predators. They've been streaking lately. So the Stars play at the Predators tonight. Remus, I thought you had that one. Coyotes, they play at the Coyotes on Tuesday. So tough game. Then they play at the Sharks on Thursday. Tough game. Then at the Kings on Saturday. So three in-division games, all playoff teams. All right. Then they play at the Ducks. So four in a row of every team in their division. Coyotes, Sharks, Kings, Ducks. But then it gets a little bit easier.
Home to
the Jackets, Blue Jackets. Home to the Avalanche. At the Avalanche, and at the Wild. Those are four games that they should all win. So they should go 4-0. They're not saying that they will, but they should go 4-0. Their schedule is easier than Chicago's.
But not
the first half, though. They have to get through those games,
yes,
and then those last four games won't matter,
Richie. Doesn't matter. Chicago's got...
Detroit three times.
Chicago's got nine hard games, and Dallas has five hard games.
I'm just saying, I think that the playoff positioning will be determined after those first four or five games.
Why?
If Dallas loses three of those four games and Chicago wins three out of four... It doesn't matter.
That's fine, but there's no guarantee that Chicago. It's not like Chicago has cupcakes for those first four games or whatever.
Are you hungry right now?
Cupcakes and muffins. We're getting a little bit. And Remus had a donut earlier, so I'm getting a little bit. You know,
it's a little pompous to eat a cupcake in the morning, isn't it?
Is that a Seinfeld line or something that I'm just not picking up
That's
on?
That's an original.
Okay, let's go to news and notes.
NHL news and notes.
As he's got a cupcake. That's the first news and note today. NHL news and notes. Craig Anderson re-signed in Ottawa. Four-year deal. I was a little puzzled by this one. A four-year deal worth $12.75 million over the 4 years, $3.187 million per season.
Okay, can I give my analysis first, and then Richie will take the exact opposite position of what I take?
I read an article about this.
I know you did.
Both of you haven't read it, eh?
No, I don't
read it. I saw it. It was linked. Timo Seppä on Puck Prospectus linked it on his Twitter.
Yeah, you saw it. Did you read it?
No, I don't read your articles.
Richie, I have a job now.
I don't have ESPN Insider, so I'm not good enough to read your articles.
Craig Anderson obviously shut out the Washington Capitals last night.
It was a free article on Puck Prospectus.
Well, we'll get to your article in a second. I think this is a good deal. I mean, I think this gives them some stability. I mean, Ottawa's rebuilding. Craig Anderson's a great goalie. You know, he gets fair market value. I'm just waiting for Richie to completely...
I can't wait
for Richie just to say terrible contract.
Well,
I think it's a good contract. 4 years.
I think Richie actually might say terrible analysis.
You've had some mediocre goaltending, but I think Craig Anderson... I'm not saying that Craig Anderson's going to win the Vezina Trophy, but I think he's going to give them better goaltending than Pascal Leclaire and Brian Elliott, for sure.
Ezzy, you could give them better goaltending than Pascal Leclaire, and they don't have to pay you $3.187 million.
The truth is, since he's gone to Ottawa, he's played pretty good.
Pretty good.
But you compare him in terms of the salary, and what you have to do, guys, is when you're looking at a player that signs an extension, you compare him to other players who are in similar situations. So with Anderson, he's 29 years old, he was a pending UFA, okay?
Right.
So what I did for the article was I compared him to Antti Niemi.
I was going
to
say.
And Jimmy Howard. Niemi's 27, Howard's 26. So they're within 3 years of each other, okay? Niemi and Howard were both pending UFAs. So you have three players within 3 years of each other, all pending UFAs. So you compare him, now you compare the numbers, okay? Career save percentage. Anderson's at 912.
Yeah.
Niemi's at 914. Howard's at 916. Fairly similar. Anderson has the lowest one, but fairly similar. And truth is, Anderson's played more games. He's played 224 career games. Niemi's only played 94. Howard, 128. So you have a better idea, a larger sample size. So the save percentages are fairly close. Now, are you signing him based on his play this year? No, because he hasn't played this well this year, you know, that well this year, especially for Colorado. Even strength save percentage, which is a better indicator than overall save percentage, takes away power play and penalty kill. Anderson's at 913 this year. Niemi is at 928, so that's when San Jose signed him at his peak value, really, right? And then Howard's at 915. But if you look at it last year, how quickly, you know, goalies move back and forth so quickly, right?
Right.
In terms of their stats. Last year, Anderson was 926, Niemi was 914, and Howard's 925. So they're essentially this, they seem like, by the stats, very similar goaltenders.
Right.
They may have different styles, they may play for different teams, but overall they're pretty similar. But then you look at the contracts. Niemi signs 4 years, $3.8 million. I ripped the deal. Yeah. I didn't like the deal.
You didn't like the deal.
You liked the deal.
I didn't mind the deal.
Okay. Howard, on the other hand, signed for half the year, term, 2 years, at $2.25 a year. Okay?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Then they come in, they sign Anderson. They sign Anderson to $3.18, so essentially right in the middle of the value of those.
That's
okay?
Fairly close, yeah.
You're squaring the value. I don't have an issue with $3.18 million. My issue, of course, is if you're agreeing to $3.18 million on 4 years. Then you take in Robin Lehner into the equation.
That's what I was going to follow up with.
You want him to be good. You know, I said in the article, is this a test? Are they saying he's not going to be good enough? Or is he too young? Or are their scouts, you know, not analyzed correctly? Or is this Brian Murray not like him? Whatever it may be. Why would you sign Anderson to 4 years? Give him more money. Give him the $3.8 million that Niemi's getting for 2 years.
Yeah.
Or a little bit less.
That is a
good maximum
point.
3 years. But the fourth year, is Lehner not going to be good in 4 years? And say he's good in 1 year. What do you do with Anderson? Say he's good in 2 years. What do you do with Anderson?
Richie, Robin Lehner had a shutout in the AHL. I mean, he's been developing nicely in the AHL, so you are right.
You don't go over 3 years. I don't go over 2 years. Yeah. At most, maybe an option for a third, or you go for a third year. You don't, under any circumstances, go for 4 years. Can he do options in the AHL, by the way?
I don't believe so.
Yeah, I don't believe they can. But, so you do 2 years, maybe maximum three. You don't do four.
The
goaltending market as it is. I mean, I'm coming out with an article next week about the goaltending market. It's so thin. Not many teams need goalies, so you're not bidding against the whole league.
It's known in the NHL that Craig Anderson's a guy who apparently doesn't love free agency. He's a guy who likes stability. Are you telling me that if you... I mean, something's got to give on this deal. Either if you're going to sign him to $3.18 million, you can do it for fewer years, or you should do it for fewer years. Are you telling me he wouldn't have taken 2 years at $6.2 million?
Well, he turned down something, I think, a little more than that from Colorado.
Well,
but say you give him 2 years, eight.
Yeah. Whatever. Or say, or you,
3 years, 3 years at.
Or if you want to give him a 4 year contract, give him a 4 year contract at $2 million a
year.
Three years at 10. Yeah. Something just. It's not only is it too long of a contract, but it's too long of a contract and it's too much money. So you're really. It's bad on both fronts, in my opinion.
Guys,
let's just put it this way. Kenny Holland's a good GM for a reason. You look at the contract, Jimmy Howard. I don't love Jimmy Howard at all.
I think Jimmy Howard on any other team would actually be a.
I don't love that. Jimmy Howard, 2 years, $2.25 million a year. The obligation is not long in terms of term. Lack of better words, and it's $2.25 million a year, and it's not eating into your money.
Jimmy's a good goalie. Jimmy likes his contract.
Jimmy likes his contract.
That's very good. Let's quickly move to New Jersey, where
Zach Parise. That was 5 minutes about Craig Anderson. That was enough.
Well, it's more important than talking about this story. But
what?
We'll go to it briefly.
Devils are going to make the playoffs, and Parise is going to take them to the finals.
Be quiet. Just be quiet. Zach Parise is returning to practice with the New Jersey Devils. Give me one good reason why. Why might he play in the NHL again this year?
Pride, Drew. He wants to get back. I like that. You want to get back before, prove that you can play in the league before the summer. You have to wait a whole year before playing again. It's hard for a player. I give him credit. As Brent Sider said, he's never coached a harder worker than Zach Parise and Sidney Crosby, those two.
Well, those are two good guys to coach, I got to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as they're not rushing him back.
No.
I don't think so, Drew.
He has to be 110% confident and healthy
and
before
he is.
You're going to...
And he is. And he got...
What are you basing that on?
Well, he had...
Do you have my Facebook chat?
I'm actually getting my, you know, medical degree from the University of Phoenix online. No, but Parise wants to come back for, you know, 3 or 4 games. It's been 4.5 months now. I mean, you know, he's confident. He's a smart guy. He's in very good shape.
Don't they should say it takes about 6 months to recover from an ACL?
Well, you need an orthopedic surgeon on the show for that, Drew.
I'm just saying, it seems like they're rushing him back for his pride, where, you know, if he's not completely healthy, you never know what you're going to do if you get hit the wrong way. I mean, nobody's going to take it easy on him because he's fresh off an injury. Doesn't matter. You can't. I just don't understand the point.
From what it's an
unnecessary risk in my perspective.
I mean, if he's healthy, what's the issue? The issue is that he gets back, he gets in his mind that he's already ready to go, and that's fine. I don't see that. I think you're nuts.
I don't know if you guys have seen him skate, but he looks good.
You thought
I was
nuts
fine.
Before.
He looks good. He's good to go.
Have you been to practice recently?
No. I watch.
Are you and Tom Giolitti on BBM Friends? You don't even have a cell phone.
Let's go to break. When we come back, Joshua Cooper of the Tennessean. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. You guys got their Pepsi, Diet Pepsi? Comfortable with those choices?
Izzy chose for me. I didn't have a choice.
Really? I didn't think you'd be a soft guy at 10 in the morning there, Richie.
True, been up for a while.
Time to go to the Illegal Curve hotline, Drew.
I'm not sure it is just yet. I think we're still waiting. I think Remus is working on getting Josh Cooper on the phone. So before we get to the hotline, we'll make sure Remus takes care of that.
Don't we need phones to do that?
now he's giving the thumbs up. So once he puts him on hold, we'll go to the Illegal Curve hotline. We're going to be joined by Josh Cooper of the Tennessean to discuss the Nashville Predators. It's time to go to the Illegal Curve
now,
hotline.
Let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Josh Cooper of the Tennessean, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Hey, no worries. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Our pleasure, as always. Josh, the Predators are, you know, they've been playing well, really, for the last number of months. I don't want to say they've guaranteed themselves a playoff spot, because they haven't, but they've sort of stabilized themselves a little bit above the pack in the Western Conference. Currently in sixth spot, tied with Los Angeles, 90 points, seven games to go in the season. You know, but first-round playoff exits are no longer acceptable in Nashville. It's been too many years now where they win, you know, they go five games, six games in the first round, and then they get the boot. Is this team built any more for a long run than in years past?
Well, that's an interesting question. Maybe yes, maybe no. I'd say yes in the fact that their two young defensemen, Ryan Suter and Shea Weber, have Olympic experience last year that it's not quite as new and fresh in their minds. They know more what it takes. They have a goaltender who's playing out of his mind in Pecorine right now and was much better than that last performance showed when they beat Anaheim when he allowed four goals. Pretty much all four of them were his fault. So in that respect, yes, but in some respects, no, just because of all the injuries they've had to call so many young people. Mm-hmm. Blake Jeffrion, who's a rookie, is centering the fourth line right now. John Blum, who's a rookie, who has played very well for them, is playing in the second defensive pair. So I'd say yes in the sense that their best players have gotten better from a year ago, but no as well in the sense that they have a lot of really young guys, and that's just, it makes it tough to kind of get past that first round. Let's say if you're playing a bunch of grizzled veterans like Detroit or, mm-hmm. or Vancouver, even San Jose, which it looks like they're going to draw one of those three teams if they make it.
Josh, Nashville has one of the best home records in the National Hockey League, if not, you know, the best home record. They've got the same amount of losses as the Vancouver Canucks and four fewer wins. Why are they so good at home?
That's an interesting question. It's tough to really say. I mean, they really seem to feed off the crowd here. They like playing here. It's a very sort of comfortable environment. Nashville is a pretty comfortable city to live in. I know a lot of them live in kind of the Brentwood-Franklin area, which is kind of a very relaxing place. I don't really know. I mean, it's maybe it's because the team hotels, the other teams are close to downtown. that could play a role.
Sure could.
I don't know. There's a lot of factors that go into it, but they are a much different team when they play here than when they play on the road, and they play a much tighter game and a game that's not quite as aggressive as they do when they play here.
Josh, Sergei Kostitsyn, acquired in the summer, has been tremendous over the past five games and really been a nice added scoring influence in the lineup, you know, lately. Can you talk about his progression as a Predator and where he's at right now?
Yeah, you know, he wasn't really in the coaching staff's favor for a little bit. Not really it was anything he was doing, but they were trying to bring him along to what they did well. And basically, I think the turning point was December 1st when he got moved up to the second line. I think it was against Phoenix or Columbus or around that. And he just took off from that point. And he hit a bit of a lull kind of after the All-Star break, after Marcel Gotch got hurt. He was trying to adjust to Mike Fisher being his centerman, but has been really good the last few games, had two goals the last game, and has kind of been forcing the issue a lot more, shooting the puck more, and he's kind of come around to what they want him to do here.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Joshua Cooper of the Tennessean. Josh, with the big acquisition that the Predators made before the trade deadline was acquiring Carey Fisher's husband, Mike Fisher. He hasn't really performed on the score sheet with 4 points in 20 games so far so far as a Predator. How has he been contributing to the team besides on the score sheet?
Yeah, Carey Fisher. You mean Princess Leia?
Yeah, exactly. Carey Underwood, of course.
Yeah.
Her CDs are underrated, by the way, Josh.
I'm sorry?
Her CDs are kind of underrated, in my opinion.
I've listened to them.
There you go.
They're not bad. He came in, he started playing really well, and he really impressed me with just how every shift for him at least seemed like a playoff shift. And I thought that was an attitude that the team needed. And you could see it sort of permeating through the lineup. And then against Minnesota, he suffered what they're deeming an upper body injury. And really hasn't been the same since then. I think it was his first 12 games with Nashville. He played 20 minutes or more four times, and since then I think his highest minute total was 1747. But one thing he has done, which is he's freed up David Legwand to really kind of play a more offensive style and be a real true first-line center, which I don't think is something he's really been throughout his career, maybe a few times during the career years here. But during that stretch, during those 20 games, Legwand has 20 points. And you can see his plays picked up. He doesn't have to be responsible for the other team's top lines or defensively as much as he used to be. And I think that's where the real residual benefit of the Mike Fisher trade has been, is not so much in what Fisher's been able to do, with what Legwand's been able to do.
Josh, Pekka-Rinne's obviously played a lot better in the second half. I mean, he wasn't bad in the first half, but he had his struggles. He had some injury problems. He wasn't getting some starts. Do you think that the Predators' playoff hopes, or, you know, their ability to win in the first round depend on Rinne basically stealing a series?
Yes, I do. Pretty much, if you look at them and how they operate and the way they play, they get outshot on average every night. I haven't looked at the numbers recently, but last I looked, it was 1.5 or 1.7 shots a night. The other teams get more zone time on them. They don't score a whole lot. Pekka-Rinne is the reason why they're a good defensive team. And because of that, I think that he will be the reason if they advance or if they don't advance. That's a lot of pressure to put on a goaltender, and you can see it, how difficult it is on him just to, after each, I remember when they were in the midst of a funk about a month ago, after each loss, he just kind of sat there after games, put his head in his hands and just sort of kind of looked down at the ground after each loss. He puts a lot of pressure on himself, and they put a lot of pressure on him with how they play, and I think that if they advance, it'll no doubt be because of how he plays.
Yeah, the Predators are being outshot by 1.3 shots per game, Josh, so you're on about that. In terms of, you know, we're going to assume the team makes the playoffs. They've been playing exceptionally well lately. It looks like, I mean, Calgary and Dallas probably aren't going to catch them. In terms of first-round matchups, Josh, is there one of those top teams that you think the Predators are better suited to play against than others?
I think Detroit, just because they play a similar sort of, I wouldn't say similar style, but the way the Predators play and the type of players they have really seem to annoy the Red Wings. Mm-hmm. And I think that, and that's why the Predators are going to finish this season winning the season series against Detroit, even though they have one more game left against them. They seem to really annoy Detroit's best players with how they play. And granted, they run into some luck with Detroit this year. Datsyuk didn't play in two games. One game was, his second game back. Another game they played, Detroit was playing a back-to-back. But I think that's the team they really match up well against. San Jose, very strong up front. I don't know if that's a team that the Predators can really take through a seven-game series. And they played Vancouver really well, but they've hit Vancouver in a couple of funks this year, too, just because the times they've played them is when they kind of hit the cruise control mode after some big win totals. So I don't know if we can really look at those numbers and say that they match up well against Vancouver. But right now, I'd probably say Detroit is their best matchup.
Josh, we'll let you go on this last question. As the Predators make their run to the playoffs here, and we spoke about their home record, is the community sort of galvanizing behind the Predators? Is there a lot of is there a buzz in the city, and you know, fan support growing as the playoffs get closer and closer?
Fan support has actually kind of been there all year, and I think a lot of it had to do with their schedule, just because the first week of the season they had Calgary, Pittsburgh, and Washington. So you have three of the marquee names in the game, and Ginla, Crosby, and Ovechkin coming here. And I think that a lot of people, I mean, they really marketed those games well, and a lot of people went to them, and they saw those three guys play, and they were just sort of really kind of into the game after that. And they've done really well attendance-wise this year. In terms of the actual city rallying around the Predators, I haven't quite seen that, to be honest with you. Granted, I don't really go out to the establishments where people would support the team that much, but it doesn't seem like that's really there in terms of the citywide kind of feel. But I'm sure if they make the playoffs, we'll see a lot more people kind of getting into it. And I think that the other thing they need to do is get out of the first round. We talked about that earlier. I think that's key, just because just getting to the playoffs for them, you probably have a sense in the fan base of, oh, here we go again, first round again. But if you get past the first round, you expose them to something new and something different, which they've never seen before. And I think that's what will really kind of galvanize the community here.
Joshua Cooper of the Tennessean, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
No worries, anytime. Enjoy it.
Take care, Josh. Thanks very much. Let's go to break. When we come back, six things we learned this week. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 10:15 this morning. We were just joined by Joshua Cooper of the Tennessean. Coming up next segment, Barry Melrose of ESPN, and still to come later on in the program, Darren Pang of TSN and Fox Sportsnet Midwest. I am Drew Mandel, joined by Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock. Michael Remus is around. Tim gets us on and off the air. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. It's time for six things we learned this week.
Six things we learned this week.
Commence countdown. Six.
Let's start with Richard on six things this week. Richie, Alex Tanguay's poise with the puck when he has confidence is arguably as good as anyone in the NHL. The Flames should do their best to re-sign him.
You always have there's always a cap concern, Drew, in terms of the Flames, and they obviously have, you know, don't have as much money available and the money locked up in people they probably would prefer not have money locked up, and especially Jay Feaster. But watching Alex Tanguay with the puck, I mean, he's gone, he went to Montreal and he went to Tampa Bay, and just things didn't work out there, but his ability with the puck is, I mean, it adds a whole new element to their team. He's so confident with it, he's so much poise, he finds the open man, whether it be the trailer, whether it be the guy on the side of the net sneaking from behind the net. He makes Ginla a better player. He makes the power play better. He makes everybody around him better. You know, maybe they like to shoot more. He's actually good in the shootout, too. Maybe they like him to shoot more. But at the end of the day, he provides offense to a team that struggles with offense. And I think that he is, his passing ability is back to where it really was when he was playing with the likes of Forsberg. He looks, honestly, this year, that confident. I haven't seen him look this confident in a long time. And you have to wonder, I mean, will he sign with the Flames next year? They have so much money locked up in players that will his salary demands, be too high? Because remember, they signed Jokinen for 2 years when they signed Tanguay for one. And they signed Jokinen to $3 million and signed Tanguay to $1.7. They have so much money locked up next year that you have to wonder if they have the money available. You look at their cap next year. Their cap is at 58.
You're saying it's not a lot of money there.
So what do you do? I mean, they should do their best to re-sign him, but my question is, are they going to be able to?
And it seems like Tanguay should want to re-sign there.
That's
as well.
Also true.
Because he's in a good situation, it seems like, right now after bouncing around the last number.
But when you're a Flames fan, you watch him with the puck, and I've watched him a lot this year. You have a sense of ease, I bet. If you're a Flames, I'm not a Flames fan, but I watch him and I say, a sense of ease. He gets the puck in the zone. It's going to be the right play. He's going to find the open man. He's going to put a pass on the tape. And that's why I think sometimes, you know, his game, he was criticized a fair amount in the past two places he's played, but he looks just right at home in Calgary.
Ezzy, Dan Bylsma should be given strong consideration for the Jack Adams Trophy at the end of the year for keeping the Pittsburgh Penguins in contention for the Eastern Conference title.
Right, and it might be a little bit early, but, you know, there's only 2.5 weeks in the season left. I think he's done a great job. You know, Malkin and Crosby have been out since January. They've both been out. Jordan Staal missed the first half of the season, and now he's kind of taken over as their top forward. But he's done a really good job. Comrie came back yesterday. They didn't play very well against the Devils, but Dan Bylsma has done a great job of managing the players that he has and, you know, having confidence in guys like Tyler Kennedy, who has played very well all year. He's very young. But, I, you know, Dan Bylsma deserves a lot of credit. Pittsburgh is playing with a very blue-collar team right now. They are still in contention for the Eastern Conference Championship right now, and I think that's really impressive when you don't really have that many scorers on your team. And you know, I think you should get a nod.
Four.
Joe Thornton has done little to make anyone think he has the ability to carry the Sharks past the second round.
Well, isn't it the same old story here, Drew?
Yes.
I mean, is there anything here that makes me think that it makes anybody think that the Sharks are going to be that team this year?
No.
I mean, has he done anything? Has he taken his game to another level? You know, like you see Jerome Iginla over the course of the Flames' run here, he's taken his game to another level. A guy who's got far more wear and tear in his body just by the style of play that he has. And then you look at Joe Thornton and you think to yourself, what's changed here? What would make me think that this team would do anything? Would he play any different? That he would do the right defensive plays? That he would get in the way? He's got 63 points in 73 games. He's playing 20 minutes a game still. He's a minus player. Now, that stat's completely flawed, but a minus player on a team that doesn't have many minus players, I think is important to note. I don't see how anybody would think that this team has changed, that Joe Thornton has changed. He's only been worse. And don't give me that he's saving up for the playoffs. This guy's had so many playoff runs, Olympics, World Cups, to prove that he's different, and he's not. And you look and you see other superstar players taking their game to the next level when their team needs it. And I don't know how you would have any confidence that Thornton will do the same.
If the Anaheim Ducks make the playoffs and get a favorable matchup, they have a very good chance at upsetting a top seed.
As it stands right now, they do not have a favorable matchup because they would be playing the Vancouver Canucks, who are looking better than they've ever looked and are going to easily win the President's Trophy this year. I think Anaheim, you know, they match up a little bit better against Detroit, but that would also be a difficult task. But the way Anaheim is able to just score goals in bunches, and you know, Teemu Selänne and Saku Koivu are, you know, amazing. Not young players, and they have been very, very good this year. If you watch the Ducks, they've been good the whole year. And right now, Ryan Getzlaf, Bobby Ryan, and Corey Perry, I would argue very strongly, and I would almost say that it's not even close, that they're the best line in hockey. And I know that Jonas Hiller came back against Nashville and he was pulled because he didn't look very good.
It's tough.
But I think Hiller's going to be all right. And I think if the Ducks can manage to maybe get up to six and play San Jose, I like their chances. But, you know, they've been one of the strongest. San Jose's been one of the strongest teams as well. But Anaheim is dangerous. When everything is going well for them, they're healthy. You know, Cam Fowler and Vishnovsky have been great on the back end. I think they could, if they get the right matchup, they can cause some trouble.
First team in the team of Slaney, first player I think in NHL history to score four goals within the last 3 minutes of a game to tie the game.
I saw that. That's a great stat. But you know. Timu's been unbelievable. I mean, we said it last week. He's just been
talked to Dan. What about it?
That's right. He's just been unbelievable.
Two.
Following up on something we spoke about earlier in the show, the Los Angeles Kings' lack of speed is going to be an issue if they face Detroit or Vancouver. If they play Phoenix or San Jose, less so.
Well, Vancouver can skate. I mean, you got the Sedins, but you got Kessler and you got Burrows. Those guys can skate up and down. Mason Raymond can skate. All their guys, for the most part, are very good skaters. Their forwards, their defensemen can move pretty well as well. You look at Detroit also. Okay, their defensemen are mobile. Cronwall, Stewart, Rafalski all can skate. Lidstrom is as efficient as he gets with his movements. Zetterberg's a terrific skater. Datsu can move well. You know, there are guys like Bertuzzi and Cleary who aren't the best, you know, Bertuzzi more so, that aren't the best skaters. But there's a spin, and France is not the fastest, but there's a speed element to Darren Helm. There's a speed element to those two teams. L.A. doesn't have the speed. Penner works to a strength in terms of boards play and below the goal line and controlling the puck. But even Andrei Kopitar isn't. He's kind of, you know, like a Ginla. Like, he's, when he gets going, he's really fast. But it takes a while for him to get going. And Penner's not a great skater. And Ponikrovski is really not a great skater if he's playing a lot. Ryan Smith's not a great skater. Sol's not a fastest skater. You know what I'm getting at there? So they're pretty slow up front. And will they be able? They can move well on the back end. But will they be able to you know, Doughty and Johnson and such. Johnson's as good of a skater as it gets. But will you be able to match up against the other teams? Now, San Jose, you have your Thorntons and your Heatleys, not the fastest skaters. You have some guys there, you know, the Willeens and the Douglas Murrays, not the fastest skaters. So you might be okay there. And in Phoenix, same kind of thing. Not the fastest group. I think that actually LA matches up better against San Jose. But speed element is going to be a factor, and I don't think LA wants to match up against those other two teams.
Jordan Leopold is playing like a man possessed, and he has helped elevate the games of many others on the games. The game,
come on,
games,
Drew. You can
game
do it.
Of many others on the Buffalo Sabres.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, not a lot of people know this, but Leopold's actually having the best year of his career this year. He scored his 13th goal last night.
It's been good.
In a win. And, I mean, you remember back to when Jordan Leopold came into the NHL with the Calgary Flames. It looked like Jordan Leopold was going to be on the Flames. You know, he was going to follow Ginland. He was going to be on the Flames forever. And then he struggled, and then he was traded to Colorado. He had some success, but he was always, he never quite reached his potential. And I think this year, Jordan Leopold, I mean, and this is probably, you know, part of the reason why Reve was, you know, basically told that he wasn't going to be on the team anymore. You know, Reve is obviously a lot older, but Jordan Leopold has been very good. Lots of speed. He's putting up great offensive numbers. He's still a minus player because he started off a little bit slowly in the first half, but he's been really good. And, you know, Tyler Myers, he's helped Tyler Myers, you know, get through his struggles. Tyler Myers has been, it's been like night and day for Tyler Myers. He was horrible in the first half. We talked to Bill Hoppe and we talked to Mike Harrington about it, of the Buffalo News, and Leopold's done a great job, and I think he should get a little bit more credit. He's obviously not, you know, anywhere close to the Norris discussion, but he's been very good. He's been their leader, and he's kind of a quiet guy. He doesn't have the booming shot. He's kind of just a very, very steady, very talented, skilled defenseman. And another guy too that on Buffalo that's been great there is Sequeira. And you know, Buffalo, probably it's going to be tough to get out of the first round, but good for them for at least turning their season around, because for a while there, it looked like they were going to dip down to 10th or 11th. So,
very good. That's it for Six Things. Of course, if you've missed any of the six things that we learned this week, they're available on our Twitter feed. Go to @LegalCurve on Twitter, and you can find out everything that's going on there. You can also friend us on Facebook, facebook.com/LegalCurve. And if you have anything on your mind on the hockey world, feel free to send it to us via our Twitter, just like Alex Klagas did. @AlexKlagas sent to @LegalCurve saying, don't forget to add to your list of stars who never take a day off, Daniel Alfredsson.
Absolutely.
He had many, many opportunities where he could have begged out due to his myriad of injuries, and he always shows up week in, week out.
I said on the show before, nothing said more to me than in the Stanley Cup, I believe it was Game 5.
Yeah.
And the Sens said most of the guys on that team had packed it in as far as I could tell. And it was shorthanded, and Daniel Alfredsson was working so hard, and he scored a shorthanded goal in that, I think it was Game 5. And he was the only guy who really brought it, and he was the blood, sweat, and tears of that team, and it was an amazing performance. And that always stood out to me as being what he was all about, and I absolutely agree with Alex there.
Good tweet from Alex, Drew, because I'm pretty sure that Alexander Ovechkin is still getting paid when he's not playing, right?
Certainly is.
Okay, so play then.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. I like that, Ezzy. Anyways, let's go to break. When we come back from ESPN, Barry Melrose will join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.